What if the thing you keep calling anxiety is actually the assignment? What if the resistance you feel every single time you move towards your calling, that sudden self-doubt, the inexplicable fatigue, the shame that shows up out of nowhere right when things are starting to work, isn't a character flaw or a mental health diagnosis or evidence that you're not ready? What if it's opposition? What if the reason the attack is most intense right before a breakthrough is because something knows a breakthrough is coming? Nobody wants to talk about spiritual warfare in a culture that has reduced faith to an aesthetic or even made it toxic or have even said it's just wrong. It's easier to, pathologize the resistance, to medicate that unease, to call the warfare burnout and treat it with a spa day. And sometimes burnout is burnout, but sometimes, and more often than the comfortable version of Christianity wants to admit, the battle is real, it is targeted, and the fact that you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't happening. The devil doesn't need you to believe in him, he just needs you distracted, delayed, ashamed, and convinced that the calling on your life is too big for someone like you. And this episode is about naming the battle, about imposter syndrome as a spiritual weapon, about shame as the thing that keeps people performing faith instead of actually living it, about the people who know exactly what they're called to and keep finding reasons to wait, and about what it actually looks like to fight. Like, not the yelling, screaming noise, not with performance, but the grounded, clear-eyed daily commitment to walk out the thing God called you to do. Welcome back to the Listen Bitch podcast. I am Brandon Lynette. We are in season 10. I call this the rebellion season. I believe we're on episode 5 of the new rebellion. Okay, 5 episodes in. I'm not slowing down. And I actually have never slowed down. I'm not planning to start now. We have talked about truth as a daily practice, about your body and the system that's keeping it sick, about money and the wounds underneath it, about relationships and who you're letting shape you. This episode goes underneath all of those because every external battle we've named has a spiritual root. And if you keep addressing the surface without understanding the foundation, you will keep fighting the same wars, maybe just in a different outfit. Okay. And this one is personal. I mean, I started this rebellion because I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted with all the truth that is out in the world, and there is no accountability. There's no one taking responsibility, and the stuff is still happening. And if you're new here, it is the fact that we know our kids are being taken, trafficked, sexually assaulted, abused, raped, mutilated, tortured, ripped apart, eaten. They're drinking their blood. Massive science experiments going on using humans, hunting parties using humans, feeding us human meat, intentional sickness on the world, vaccines that cause problems, not cures, health that is connected with the food industry that has worked on keeping us sick, and big pharma who makes money on you being a customer, not healed. This rebellion is to really get you to take massive responsibility at the core of who you are, because that's a middle finger to them. Anyone who's going to think for themselves and to get healthy for themselves and to take responsibility financially, mentally, emotionally, all of that, spiritually, you're not going to fit into their system anymore. And while they're out there mocking us, and setting the world on fire, causing fights, keeping us against each other, like, kids are still being trafficked. Evil is still happening. We are in the devil's playground right now. So I know this episode is going to hit some of you in a place that you've been protecting for a long time. And I'm just going to ask you to stay with it, okay? I want you to sit through this because the battle is real and it's targeted. And the thing about spiritual warfare that the comfortable consumer version of Christianity, okay, otherwise known as the soft-ass Christians, they don't want to sit with this. It's not generic. It's not a vague cloud of negativity that settles over everyone equally. It's targeted. It knows your calling. It knows your assignment. The devil deploys specifically against the thing you are most uniquely positioned to do, because that is the thing with the most potential impact, and therefore the thing most worth neutralizing, which means the intensity of the resistance in your life is not random. The specific flavor of self-doubt is not an accident. The particular way shame shows up for you, the precise area where imposter syndrome is the loudest, the exact type of distraction that most reliably pulls you off course. These are not coincidences. They are intel. They tell you something about what you're actually carrying and what the enemy has assessed as the threat level, you fully walking in it. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. The resistance you feel toward your calling is evidence of the potency of the devil's attack. Nobody deploys heavy artillery against a target that doesn't fucking matter. The fact that the warfare gets loudest when you're moving towards something real is not a sign to stop. It is a sign that you are moving in exactly the right direction, and the devil knows it. This reframe is not about giving him too much credit, okay? Because I know the ending of the story, and God wins. And I'm not telling you to live in a posture of fear. The Bible says it a million times. Fear not. Do not fear. It is about accurately understanding the nature of the battle so you stop blaming yourself for it. So many people spend years interpreting spiritual warfare as personal failure. The resistance must mean I'm not ready. The doubt must mean I'm not called. The shame must mean there's something fundamentally wrong with me. And from inside that interpretation, you're going to delay. People hide, people perform, and they wait for a version of ready that is never going to come, because ready is not the prerequisite for the calling. Obedience is. Imposter syndrome, and it's not what you think it is. It gets talked about like it's a confidence issue. I thought it was a confidence issue. Like the fix is a better morning routine. How many of those have you gone through? A stronger personal brand, more testimonials, more proof, get more credentials, more something external that will finally convince you and everyone else that you belong in the room. That framing right there keeps you on a treadmill that never arrives anywhere, because imposter syndrome is not a confidence issue, it is an identity issue. And underneath that identity issue is a spiritual one. And this is how it works, okay? You have a calling, something real, something specific, something you've known about on at some level, probably longer than you've admitted. And somewhere between receiving that download, that calling, and walking it out, you picked up a question. Who the fuck am I to do this? Who am I to lead this? Who am I to build this? Who am I to speak on this? Who am I to charge for this? Who am I to take up this much space? These are my questions. God, who am I? You know who you created me to be. Who am I to do this with my history, with my big feelings, with my outspoken, say whatever unapologetically at all times, no filter mouth, my inconsistencies, my private self that doesn't always match the public one? Who am I to stand up and say I have something worth saying? And that question sounds like humility. I learned really fast it is not humility. Humility is accurate self-assessment that leaves room for God. Okay, that question right there, those questions, every single one of those questions is accusation. It is the voice that knows if it can keep you questioning your right to show up, it doesn't have to do anything else. You will disqualify yourself on evil's behalf. You will stay small. You will stay quiet. You will stay hidden, not because anyone forced you, but because the question convinced you it was the responsible thing to do. The answer to who am I to do this is not a longer list of credentials. It is not more confidence or more evidence or more external validation. It is the same answer it has always been. I am who God said I am, called to what God said I am called to, equipped not because I arrived fully formed, but because the one who calls is also the one who equips. That is not arrogance. That is alignment. And operating from that alignment, actually believing it, actually building from it, is one of the most countercultural acts available to you right now. That's your FU to the world. And then we have shame, because that's the thing nobody wants to say out loud. And it is the most effective weapon in the arsenal of evil because it doesn't need to be deployed repeatedly. It really just has to be installed once. And then it runs in the background silently for years, sometimes decades, shaping every decision, every relationship, every moment of visibility, every time you consider stepping into something bigger than what you've been before. Shame is different from guilt. Guilt says, I did something bad. Shame says, I am something bad. Guilt is about behavior, and shame is about identity. And shame, unlike guilt, cannot be resolved by changing behavior because the problem it identifies isn't what you did, it's who you are, which is why people who are operating from deep shame can succeed externally and still feel fundamentally fraudulent. They can build things, earn things, achieve things, and still be waiting for the moment everyone figures out the truth about them. That waiting, that low-grade terror of being found out, is the exhaust note of shame. It's the wound running underneath all of it. Do you think they have joy or peace running on that level? Where does it come from? Everywhere. It comes from the thing that was done to you that was never supposed to happen, or from the version of yourself you showed someone and it was weaponized against you, from the failure that was treated like a verdict rather than an event, from the family system that communicated in a thousand subtle ways that your real self was a problem to be managed, from the religious environment maybe that used conviction as a tool for control and left you with a God image that looks more like a disappointed parent than a father who runs toward you, from the culture that told you your body, your brain, your intensity, your needs were too much and not enough simultaneously. Shame thrives in silence and secrecy. That is its operating environment. And the moment it gets named out loud to someone safe in the light, it begins to lose power. It's not instant, not completely, but the naming breaks the isolation, and the isolation is what keeps it lethal. You are not the only one carrying this. You're not uniquely broken. And the thing you're the most ashamed of is, in most cases, the exact thing that God wants to use. Not despite what happened, but through it. Because your survival of it, your healing from it, is the testimony someone else needs to hear to believe that their own survival is possible. The shame that has been keeping your calling in a waiting room is not God's voice. God's voice calls you forward, always, forever. It convicts you without condemning. It names the truth without using it as a weapon. If the voice in your head is keeping you frozen, if it's keeping you hidden, if it's keeping you convinced that your past disqualifies your future, that is not the Father. And you do not have to keep listening to it. And this one, oh, I know this is going to hurt some of you because the performance of faith versus actually walking it out. Uncomfortable is where growth is. I'm just going to say that because there is a version of faith that looks correct from the outside and it costs nothing on the inside. It shows up to church, it posts the scripture, it signs off on all the delusions of the world and everything that's wrong because it's loving everybody, right? It knows the vocabulary, prays the right prayers, uses the right language, checks the right boxes. Performing faith as a social identity rather than living it is a daily practice, and it is one of the most effective ways to remain completely unchanged while appearing completely devoted. The performance of faith is not always conscious. I get that. Sometimes it starts genuine and then it drifts slowly into autopilot. Sometimes it develops as a defense mechanism. If I look faithful enough, nobody will look too closely at what's actually happening underneath. Sometimes it's what you learned faith looked like before you understood what it actually was. But at some point, the performance and the practice diverge, and the divergence is felt as a hollowness, a going through the motion quality, a sense that you're speaking a language you understand intellectually but aren't actually living from. And the gap is the open door. Actually, walking out faith is not louder or more visible than performing it. In fact, it's often quieter most of the time, is the private obedience when nobody is watching. It's the decision you make in the dark that nobody will ever give you credit for. It's saying yes to the thing God is asking when the thing is inconvenient or expensive or frightening or completely at odds with what makes sense on paper. It's the daily surrender of the need to control outcomes and the daily choice to move anyway. It's less about what you post and more about what you do at 6 a.m. when nobody's watching. And the resistance is loudest and the excuses are most readily available. And the people who know their calling and keep delaying it are almost always caught in this gap. Not because they don't believe, but because acting on the belief requires them to stop performing and start walking. And walking is exposed. Walking means you can fall in public and everyone's going to see you. Walking means you can't hide behind the language of preparation and waiting on God indefinitely. Walking means other people will have opinions. And the performance is much safer, so much more comfortable, so much less costly in the immediate term, even though in the long term it costs you everything. And it will cost you everything. And I want to speak directly to you. The person, you know, you've known your calling for a very long time. You don't suspect it, you know it. You have felt it with the kind of clarity that shows up in the quiet moments when you're not distracted, in the car, in the shower, at 3 a.m. when the noise stops and the truth gets loud. You know what you're supposed to be doing. You know what you're supposed to be building. And you have been finding reasons to wait for months, for years, maybe longer. You're waiting until the kids are older, until you have more money, until you've done more research, until you feel more ready, until the timing is better, until the fear is smaller, until the shame gets quiet, until the imposter syndrome lifts, until someone gives you permission or validates the vision or confirms the calling in a way that finally feels like enough. Here's what I need you to hear. The waiting is not wisdom. The waiting is warfare. Every day you delay is a day the calling doesn't get walked out, and the people who needed what you carry don't receive it. And that is not a guilt trip. I'm saying th those are the stakes. Your calling is not about you. It never was. The thing that God put in you was there for someone else, for a lot of someone else's. And their access to it is dependent on your willingness to stop waiting for the perfect conditions and start moving in the conditions you actually have right now. Listen, bitch, the conditions will never be perfect. I'm a lot of years in on this, and the fear is still not gone. And I don't think it will ever fully go away. It's definitely not going to fully go away before you start. The imposter syndrome will likely show up on a day one and on day 1,000. It's going to keep continuing to knock at your door. And the shame is going to have opinions about your visibility. All of that is real. And none of it is a reason to wait. The obedience is required before the clarity, before the confidence, before the feelings line up. You move first. The confirmation comes after. That has always been how this works. And waiting to feel ready before you move is a delay strategy, and you're just like pretending that's your faith. So, Brandon, what does fighting actually look like? Not performance, not volume, not the appearance of spiritual activity. Fighting looks like daily obedience. It looks like doing the things you know you're supposed to do, even when you don't feel like it, even when the resistance is high, even when the results aren't visible yet. It looks like choosing truth over comfort in the small moments because the small moments are where the character that holds the big moments is built. It looks like dealing with the shame rather than managing it. Actually dealing with it, bringing it into the light, naming it to someone safe, letting God into the specific places that you've been too ashamed to show him. And not because he doesn't already know, but because your willingness to bring it rather than hide it is the act of trust that begins the healing. It looks like replacing that imposter question with the identity statement. Not the positive affirmation you chant in the mirror, but as a genuine daily practice of returning to what's actually true about you, who God says you are, rather than what the wound, the warfare, or the highlight reel comparison says. Your brain wires toward what you practice. Practice the truth long enough and consistently enough, and it becomes the reflex instead of the lie. And it looks like moving. Specifically, concretely, today, one step toward the thing that you've been delaying, not the whole thing, one step, because momentum is spiritual. Movement creates clarity, and the devil's greatest victory is not getting you to fail spectacularly. It's getting you to stand still indefinitely in the name of preparation and waiting and not being ready yet. One step, today, not when the fear is gone, now. So name the shame. Write it down where no one's going to see it. The specific thing that you've been carrying, specific wound or failure or secret that's been keeping you contracted and hidden. Not to dwell in it, but to see it clearly, because you cannot heal what you will not acknowledge and you cannot acknowledge what you will not name. Put it on a piece of paper. And then I want you to identify the delay. What is the specific thing you've been called to that you keep postponing? And what is the real reason? Underneath the practical reasons, underneath the timing reason, underneath the it's not right in the moment reason, what is the actual fear? Name it and write it next to the calling. Look at both of them together and ask honestly, is this fear big enough to justify the cost of staying still spiritually? And then I want you to take one step today toward the thing that you've been delaying. Not a planning step, not a research step. An actual step, a conversation you've been avoiding, a piece of content you've been sitting on, a price you've been afraid to set, a conversation with God where you actually say out loud, here I am, this is what I'm afraid of, and I'm moving and I'm doing it anyway. One step, and it's got to be irreversible because your nervous system needs the evidence that you're actually going to do what you'll say you do, and so does your faith. The battle is real. You are not imagining the resistance. But you are also not fighting it alone, and the outcome of this war was settled long before you entered it. The question is not whether you win. The question is whether you're going to show up. 5 episodes in, and I pray that this is the one that changes the most for the most people, because everything else we've talked about already right now has a spiritual root, and this is the episode that has really called it out. If something cracked open for you, if you felt the shame get named, if you recognize the delay for what it is, if the warfare got identified in a way that finally makes sense, makes the resistance make sense, do not let that land without doing something with it. That clarity is a gift. Please use it. Like the show, subscribe, leave a written review. I keep asking because it keeps mattering. That review is someone else's entry point into a conversation they've needed for a long time. Go to brandonlinette.com, plug into everything happening, okay? Subscribe to the YouTube channel, watch the full video version of this, leave a comment. You are not too late. You are not too broken. You're not too far behind. The calling of your life has not expired while you were waiting to feel ready. It is still there. It has always been there. And the rebellion, the real one, the one that matters most, is deciding today that you are done letting shame, fear, imposter syndrome, and the performance of faith keep you from actually walking out the thing you were put here to do.